It's the Football League podcast that's been trying to arrange a cage fight with its rivals for some time. Coming up, we fought a South Coast 4-4. QPR won a game. Seriously, we'll tell you how. West Brom and Hull are off and running. Pompey look good in League One. There's joy for Notts as the Magpies pinch their first points. Chuck in some scouting reports and a tweet of the week. And that's this edition of What the EFL. On match week two in the Football League, shone brighter than Tom Brady's trousers. Here to bask in the glow are my two cohorts. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams, joined by Adrian Clark.
Hello. On that very subject, what do we think of Tom Brady's clobber with the Mac and the white trouser, the white jean? I see it. Did he pull it off or not? That's the big question.
Oof. Sam Parkin, for me, it's something you could get away with in Vegas in the 70s, but in Birmingham in 2023, it's touch and go at best.
What, in some kind of cop drama or film? Yeah. Clark, he's been complimented on his T-shirt already today, so straight in with the garment jibes. I thought it was dreadful, to be honest. I thought it was a bad outfit. Yeah. He looked very Hollywood, I thought. His head looked very Hollywood, I thought. Yeah. Maybe it was just he looked so displaced at St Andrews. Good stuff, wasn't it?
Will we see him there again, do you reckon, Adrian? Is that just I described it at the time of the announcement as window dressing. I reckon he's there to smile and wave first game of the season, and then you might see him, you know, in the unlikely event they get to the playoff final, I'm sure he'd make it. But other than that...
No, I think you're being cynical. I get the feeling he's up for it. He's into it, big style. And I think he's going to be quite busy and active behind the scenes. There you go. I think he might have got the bug, a little bit like Reynolds and McElhenney.
I'm not sure he was too across what was going on with the PK award, was he? He looked a little bit bemused in the stand.
All right, so Birmingham are the Brady Bunch again for the first time since Karen left. We're not going to talk much more about them today, though. We are going to get into the Championship shortly. But before we do that, how about a mention for this fantastic offer from our friends at Quinbet. They've enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It's for new customers that sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of this podcast. We'll tweet that out too. It's 18 plus, and remember, always gamble responsibly. Right then, let's get to the weekend's action. We'll start at St Mary's. No James Ward-Prowse for Southampton, but no problem in scoring goals and dominating possession for Russell Martin and co. Some problems defensively, mind you. A 4-4 thriller with Norwich on the South Coast. Adam Armstrong's stoppage time penalty rescued a point for the hosts. Here's what he made of it.
Well, it's one of them games when I think we knew we'd give sloppy goals away. But look, I thought we played brilliantly with the ball. And like I said, at the end of the day, we didn't get beat. We know we said in the game, in the change room after the game, that we should have took the 3 points, but the main thing is not to get beat, and we didn't do that. So one of them things, you know, we'll look back in the game and we'll go again next week.
So that's the Armstrong analysis. What about you, Sam? I mean, I just had a look at the Bear statistics and thought, that's very Russell Martin, 70% possession and 31 shots at goal.
Yeah, I know there's another very good podcast that does this, but I thought it was isn't it the most 94-95 game in history, Southampton against Norwich? I think going into it, easy to say after the event, but I thought this had the look of a really high-scoring game to teams that are going to be capable of giving sides a bit of a hiding this year. Really good attacking players across the piece, and that's exactly how it played out. And yeah, there are vulnerabilities about Southampton. Probably we would have preempted that, but I think the biggest thing here was the setup from David Wagner going two up against Southampton. Not many teams are going to do that. Real physicality, the nous of Barnes, along with that running power of Sargent. And not only that now, but it's such an offensive-looking team, Norwich, with the fullbacks. Adrian spoke last week about Kenny McLean dropping in between the centre-halves. Other than potentially that trio, everyone is an attacking player. So you have the legs of Hernandez. Sara was probably the main one in this at the weekend. And obviously Jonathan Rowe, who's a young lad, started with 2-2. Got himself a header at the weekend as well. So I thought that's huge credit to the way that Wagner set his team up, light years away from what we were seeing from them at the back end of last season. So they go away with a lot of credit. And I think that the reaction of the Norwich manager at the end of the game shows that the point was the right result. I think that Southampton were better in the second half. You touched on the amount of attempts. They were knocking at the door, certainly. A little bit unfortunate that Norwich's fourth was actually when Will Smallbone was injured off the pitch. So a product of the new rules maybe coming into play there.
Bad mistake though, wasn't it, from Manning?
Yeah, bad mistake from Ryan Manning. And yeah, just on individual moments, the penalty.
Oh.
I think that is the referee. Look at the player's reaction. Look at the Norwich lads. That is never a penalty.
I've got it written here on my notes in capital letters. Never, ever a penalty.
Kyle Walker Cafu, right, has got the ball in the area, if you haven't seen it. And he knows as a player, over his left shoulder coming, he throws himself in front of the player, manipulates the contact between the two, not a penalty. So they were unfortunate in that regard, but definitely the right result.
Adrian, a couple of pens for Adam Armstrong. Shea Adams also on target here. They're kind of in that Jerome Earnshaw vortex, aren't they, where the Championship looks a bit easy for them, the Premier League looks tricky. But if those two are firing, then you ought to be looking at, what, minimum 10, 15 goal output from both of those this season?
Yeah, it's absolutely true. Yeah, two goals for Shea Adams now, both from the bench. So he's going to plunder all sorts, I think, this season. Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's the Cameron Jerome vortex sort of repeating itself, isn't it? They're going to score a lot of goals. They just play a risky brand of football, and they will gift goals to opposition teams. I think Southampton, they concentrate a lot on what they do with the ball, but they need, and this has been a theme with Russell Martin teams, they need to also find a little bit more solidity without it, not to offer up quite as many easy goals to opposition teams. And I picked up Norwich ahead of the season, but they've even surprised me how bright and breezy they've been. I think it's been an excellent start for the Canaries. And Sara, I just feel like he has potential to be one of the stars of the Championship this season. What a goal that was. Absolute scorcher.
Quick nod to James Ward-Prowse, having left this morning. One of the best Twitter videos I've seen, X videos I've seen in a long time. Nearly cried myself.
Did you?
Yeah.
I didn't see it.
Oh, he was there from like the age of 6 or 7. So they got footage from way back when. So, no, it's pretty glorious. And then, like, ends with him fizzing in 78 free kicks from identical spot on the pitch. So, yeah, really nice. And I think, you know, last week, if I can just go back to the opening game against Sheffield Wednesday, he made the winning goal, didn't he? Celebrated. I mean, what a professional. That's a great signing that West Ham are getting.
Yeah, it looks like Romeo Lavia is going off somewhere too. We'll wait and see if the Saints are plundered any further. Let's go on, though, to West Brom's first home game of the season. It ended in victory against Swansea. Closer than it ought to have been, though. The Baggies were 3-0 up at the midway point of the second half before Swansea pulled a couple back late on. Carlos Corberan back on the sidelines here, Clark. He sent off against Blackburn last week, served his ban in the League Cup midweek. He says he's going to tone it down a bit. I guess that was harder as the game went on. Three shots on target they had, West Brom, scored with all of them.
Yeah, it was all a little bit tough at the end. They were clinging on by their fingernails against a Swansea team that were terrible in the first hour of the match, but then suddenly found their feet and they had them rocking. West Brom, yeah, maybe slightly fortunate, I guess, to be in front. They didn't play amazingly well. It was a case of set pieces and long throws really hurting the Swans, who I think Michael Duff said have got a bit of a soft underbelly. So that's something for them to definitely work on. They are a big team, West Brom. They've always been a side that are strong at set pieces. Doesn't matter which manager's in charge. And that was the case here. 3-4-3, I think it still doesn't really suit John Swift. They're not building a system around him. I think he is better given freedom to operate in central areas. But yeah, he operated off the left, did okay. Wallace wasn't great. You're probably looking at that team and thinking they really need a striker, West Bromwich Albion. I know they've got Thomas Asante, didn't play in this game, but in here it was Phillips who started and Madja off the bench. Still think they could do with one more, really. And maybe in the middle of the park, I think that much was summed up here. It's not easy to get the ball against Swansea. I know they've changed their style, the Swans, but West Brom had by far, you know, the inferior amount of possession. And I think that Yokoslu and Malumbi are good off the ball, really strong. They get around the engine room. They break up play. They did a good job of screening service into Pirot and Yates. But on the ball, don't really get enough of it. And I think that front three needs maybe a little bit more quality and creativity. So a few things to for Corbrand to think about. I think they're just relieved to have got the 3 points without really playing superbly. Just a quick one on Swansea. Nice to see Charlie Patino come off the bench. He's on loan from Arsenal. And get himself an assist from a corner. And I think from another of his corners, they got the second goal as well. So instant impression. I think he caught the eye for the Swans.
I'd like somebody to get in touch at EFL What The on Twitter or find us on any other social media platform and tell me why Josh Madger has Josh Madger on the back of his shirt and not just Madger. He's done this before and it's wound me up. But if there's a legit reason, fine. But I need an explanation, please. Right. QPR winning a game was so unlikely it reduced one of their players to tears. Here's Sinclair Armstrong speaking up the score in his first senior goal in the R's win at Cardiff.
Oh, this is... Nah, this is something, you know, I've been waiting for, you know, for a long time, you know. Of course, last season it didn't happen, you know, and... I just kept praying and, for one opportunity to come. And then, thankfully, it happened today and also got an assist. So, yeah, I just want to put that out there. I'm delighted with the result and, hopefully more to come.
Oh, we know, Sinclair. We know. Were you crying when the full-time score came in from South Wales, Sam, or were you just too gobsmacked for that?
Yeah, gobsmacked, mate. That's the correct terminology. Yeah, it's 1 week into the season and I got an enormous whole pie of humble, haven't I, after what I've been giving Gareth back in the last season and the start of this season. But I thought in both departments, the departments that win football matches, he made changes and he got it right. And my goodness, they produced a performance for an hour anyway. Well, the last 15 minutes, it was bombardment, really. Cardiff turned up for the last 15 minutes, but I thought to freshen up the attack, Paul Smith wide on the right-hand side. He played a bit of a hybrid role. So they dropped into a back three, a back five without the ball, which we haven't seen before, really, maybe from Gareth Ainsworth's teams. And Paul Smith played as a wing back or dropped in alongside the three centre halves when they were doing that. But he gave Callum O'Dowda a real tough time down the right-hand side. So that was interesting. That was important in the victory. Obviously, Sinclair Armstrong getting picked from the off was huge in terms of the outcome of the game. His involvement, only 14 touches. I think he played about 73 minutes. So that's a touch every 5 minutes. So he's not heavily involved, but what he is unpredictable, credible effort, credible threat with his physicality. Said he couldn't see the ball for his goal because his contact was playing up, which I enjoyed further. And then he showed for the second goal composure that I've not seen from him. You know, that's not one of his strong suits to this point. Hopefully it will develop, but it was a brilliant team goal, the second one. Dykes, Chair, Armstrong, and then a lovely finish from Kenneth Pyle, who his relationship with Elias Chair was very good as well. Elias Chair playing in off the left and Kenneth Power able to bomb up and down the left-hand side. So he made changes offensively, defensively, yes as well, but the introduction of Steve Cook, I mean, that's a game changer, I think, for Rangers. Young lad in there last week alongside Morgan Fox. Those two in front of Begovic, all of a sudden, it's looking a hell of a lot better. But yeah, credit definitely to Gareth Ainsworth on these changes, for the players carrying it out. And for Cardiff, I think there's some gaps in their squad. I think they're a few players short. I'd like to see O'Dowda not in that left-back position. I think they were transformed when he went a bit higher up. He made the goal. And I just think probably in midfield, they missed Joe Rules. I like the business they've done in forward areas. Not too concerned there, but I think defensively and in midfield, they'll probably do a little bit of business because they're looking a bit short right now.
In Yorkshire, meanwhile, there was a goal-laden derby at Hull where the Tigers tamed the Owls of Sheffield Wednesday to put their midweek cup set against their fellow nearish neighbours Doncaster behind them. They came from behind to do it after there's only Juan Delgado gave Wednesday the lead, but after that, Ozan Toufan took charge.
Seri plays it back to Traore, who's going to tiptoe into the area. Traore sets the balls and Toufan! He's got a hat-trick! And Hull City might have all 3 points.
Yeah, it was an Ozan Toufan masterclass for Hull City. No doubt about that. Hat-trick. If you haven't seen his second goal, absolute beauty into the top corner. And when someone like him is at it, when the players around him are feeling good about themselves, he can cause a lot of damage against Championship sides. No doubt about that. So, yeah, really, really pleasing. Not least because Rossignol was stinging in his criticism. He absolutely battered his players for their performance and their limp effort against Donny in the Carabao Cup. And obviously going 1-0 down, there was a feeling that would they crumble, but they didn't. The exact opposite happened. They ran this game, had a lot of possession, a lot of the ball, I think 73% of the ball, and 16 shots, 7 on target. It was a bit of a pasting, really, that they gave to Sheffield Wednesday. 4-2 flatters the Owls. I think the two of the standouts outside of Toufan, probably the central midfielders, Regan Slater and Jean-Michel Seri. We know about Seri's quality, but Regan Slater, I think, is a player that's really improved the last couple of years. And he was on the ball a lot in this game, winning it as well. Loads of drive. And I think he's a player that the fans are really, really taken to at the KCOM. As for Sheffield Wednesday, wow, just poor. Just
terrible start for them, isn't it?
Absolute rubbish. Yeah, I mean, there was a golfing class. And this is Hull. You know, Hull might be a dark horse this year, but they're not one of the stronger teams on paper at the moment. And yet they got absolutely mullered, really. It sometimes happens, doesn't it, when a new manager comes in. In the case here, it's Zisco Munoz, where it's a clean slate. And that's great for some players, but sometimes they see things with different eyes. And he's made a lot of changes. He changed the goalie, for example, here. Cameron Dawson was left out. Reece James, not involved at all. For me, he adds quite a lot of balance to the team. Marvin Johnson, who was a stalwart in League One, didn't feature. I think George Byers, they've always looked a better team with Byers. I'd put him in ahead of Backinson every day of the week. He was on the bench. Michael Smith as well, I think, really would help Sheffield Wednesday from the start. So I think he's getting to know his players, and maybe he's not picking the right team at the moment, Zisco Munoz. Very quickly on Hull, they're looking to do a bit of business this week, I read. Max Bird from Derby, Scott Twine from Burnley, and maybe Jesserin Raksaki on loan from Crystal Palace. So if they were to get those three, suddenly I think Hull City would be looking towards top half.
Yeah, and Sam will be very happy if we get Scott Twine back in the Championship for another season. In terms of any other business in the Championship, somebody who might be about to leave it is Chuba Akpom. David Ornstein reporting that Ajax have reached an agreement to sign him. 12 million plus 2 million in add-ons, that is euros. He's 27 years of age. He's off for a medical as we speak. It's an interesting one, this, Sam. Adrian can tell us a bit more about Akpom the player, but in terms of the move, Sam, you kind of think, wow, he's going to go to Ajax. But then you look at it, they're not in the Champions League this year. And is it a massive step up in levels to be playing his first two games if he joins will be at Excelsior and Fortuna Sittard?
Yeah, but does the name of Ajax still hold that clout? It probably does. I think great opportunity for him. Probably a little bit surprised that there's not a Premier League team that would maybe take the gamble, because he's technically so good as a footballer. I think we saw that in abundance last year. Obviously, we know that he came through at Arsenal, lost his way to a degree. But yeah, technical ability is no question that he'll be able to handle it, you know, at the level that he's going to. So yeah, he deserves his move. Something hasn't smelt right in the last couple of weeks. He's obviously had his head turned and knew there was strong interest. So it's an interesting move because it's Ajax, because it's a different country. When I anticipated him probably joining someone in the lower reaches of the Premier League or a Premier League team, that would have been him in the bottom half and maybe in for a bit of a struggle. So he certainly won't be doing that at the Dutch Giants.
He's had more loans, Clarky, hasn't he, than a student with poor financial planning. So I guess a permanent move will suit him well. But you know him well. Can he do it on a cold Tuesday night at Go Ahead Eagles?
I'm sure he can. Look, he's technically a good footballer. He's been brought up the Arsenal way. So he's used to playing in teams that have a lot of the ball. His movement's excellent. His touch is good. He likes to drop in deep, doesn't he? I'm a little bit surprised because he found a manager, didn't he, in Michael Carrick that got him, that brought out a side of Tube Rangpom that we hadn't really seen previously. So for him to move on so quickly from Michael Carrick shocks me to a degree, but just look at Ajax's stadium. You know, you're playing in front of it, you know, that ground packed out every week. The fans, your absolute hero around Amsterdam. It's not the worst city in the world to be living in either, is it? There's a lot of temptation, a bit more glamour, I would suggest, playing for Ajax than Middlesbrough. But on Middlesbrough, it's a slightly worrying start, isn't it? Obviously, poor results, poor performances. I said on the previous pod, a poor transfer window in terms of not improving the starting 11. They need to get the old checkbook out, if they still write checks, that is, and get some players because they're not up to it at the moment.
Sorry, I'm going to digress, but if you're picking like a dream career, if you were like a top player, like 2 years at Ajax on a bicycle next to a canal, that would be in there for me. A few of the top Brazilians did it, didn't they? Went to Holland at the start of their European journey, Ronaldo, Romario. So I can see the appeal. One thing I will say, don't love the grub in
not their specialty, Amsterdam. Is it?
Yeah. Nah, so they'll have to sacrifice that. Yeah.
All right. Well,
he's been getting you stuck into the Palmos, probably. Palmos, is that right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Middlesbrough. There you go.
One other thing I just wanted to mention briefly was the red card for Fred Onyedinma for Rotherham. What did you make of it? Because the first one, he got yellow carded for going into the crowd, but it felt like to me it was like a rugby charge where the lads behind him sort of pushed him into the crowd, and he gets a yellow from Bobby Madley, and then the second one he gets fouled. It's quite, you know, it's a proper foul, and he gets up, looks at the ref, and quickly waves the imaginary yellow, and he gets sent off for it. I mean, has there been a sillier red card really in many a season than Onyedinma there? Because, and it was really costly as well, because obviously Blackburn Rovers came back with that Smodic double and got the equaliser. So yeah, I felt a little bit sorry for him. It was a daft one, but I also thought the ref was a little bit busy.
Yeah, it's one of those classic ones that we're seeing at the start of the season, isn't it? We'll see if they carry on being quite so hot on this kind of thing as the season rolls on. I rather suspect not, but that's not much use to old Fred, I guess. All right, that was the Championship. We'll do League One next. Let's head to League One, where Bolton won completely comprehensively at the completely Suzuki Stadium against Cheltenham. Adrian, you saw them in the cup last week. I'm guessing you weren't that impressed then, and you're not that impressed with what they did.
No, I wanted to talk about it just because I saw them up close in that game against Birmingham, and they didn't make many changes. I think three or four. So, and the changes that came on during the game were first team regulars. So kind of got to see most of their players, and there's just not a lot there. Got to say, for Cheltenham, minus Alfie May this season, someone that really had that magic in his boots at that level, someone who could make things happen. They definitely lack a little bit of pace, a little bit of creativity. It's all a little bit pedestrian, I've got to say, for Cheltenham when they have the ball. And then without it, they're just, most of the matches are without the ball at the moment, unfortunately. Birmingham boss possession the other day. And in this game against Bolton, it was exactly the same. Bolton had 74% of possession. And at the moment, Cheltenham don't look robust enough to handle it, not against good teams. Birmingham could have scored 8 or 9. And I think that Bolton won this really, really easily. The front two, Sam's mate, Adebayo, and Deon Charles, excellent in this game. Gave the back three of a little bit of a run around. And it was kind of the same the other day with Jukovic and Miyoshi and others that were supporting. So, yeah, a lot of work, I think, for Cheltenham to do. Curtis Davis, obviously, baptism of fire for him. Two home games. 6 goals conceded in those matches. What I will say is that he was busy in this game, our old mate. 6 interceptions, 11 clearances, and 3 blocks from Curtis Davis. Maybe a little bit overworked. But yeah, well played, Bolton. They look excellent. They really do. And yeah, I mean, I think everybody played pretty well for them. It was a very, very dominant performance. And you just got to look at the bench. I think Magoma came on, and Lundalu, Thomason, Carlos Mendes Gomez, Cameron Jerome, the aforementioned. You know, it's not a bad bench at League One level, is it? So I think they've got the depth to last the course this year.
All right, so two seasons going in different directions, you'd suspect, for those two. You might say the same, Sam, about Leighton Orient and Portsmouth, a 4-0 win for Pompey at Brisbane Road. Like the Cheltenham-Bolton game, this one pretty much done by half-time. Lots of underwhelmed Pompey fans when John Massino got the gig. Probably a few changed their minds by now.
Possibly, yeah. I mean, 14 games unbeaten now. There's quite a few draws in there, I think, back end of last season, but they're going well. They're hard to beat. I think the depth of the squad is the main change from last season. They've used 22 players in the first three games, and I don't think there's been a real drop off anywhere across these three games in obviously the different competitions. But they're showing their strength. The subs at the weekend: Robertson, who they've signed on loan from City; Yenge, I'll get onto him in a minute; Scully, Sparks, Raggett. That's not bad, I don't think, at League One level. He showed his tactical awareness again at the weekend. I think there's been criticism in previous regimes at Portsmouth about not making subs quick enough, not being able to impact games from the bench. Kenny Jackett probably jumps out, and Danny Cowley probably to a lesser degree, but I remember that criticism as well. So he's making good changes off the bench. Scully came on at half-time. Kamara, I think, started wide. He played in the week against Forest Green, so felt that needed a bit of impetus in the wide area, a bit of fresh legs. And Yenge, Kasimi Yenge, was an Australian cult hero already. I think he racked up a few in pre-season. I think he got a hat-trick in a behind-closed-doors game or something. The fans have just like immediately taken to him without probably seeing a great deal of him. And he's notched 4-3. And I think he's only started maybe the one. So it was his goal that got them a point on opening day against Bristol Rovers. And he's really kicked on from there. And I saw them in that penultimate pre-season friendly at AFC Wimbledon, and they didn't have a lot on AFC Wimbledon's goal, and they looked a little bit powder puff in front of the opponent's net. Highest XG in the division, number of chances created against Bristol Rovers, and obviously at the weekend, four goals, starting to look the business going forward as well. So yeah, really exciting. I think I will caveat it saying that Orient have got, I think, eight missing already, and not eight players that will walk into the team, by the way. Let's not get carried away. But Sol Brin, a goalkeeper who was on loan at Swindon from Middlesbrough last year, would be playing. Got Dan Adji, I think it's a good signing at the level. Darren Prattley, there's three that would probably add them a little bit more quality and a bit more experience as well in regards to Prattley. So not a good day for Orient, but I wouldn't judge them just yet. A couple of bad goals given away, though, a penalty and an own goal from Omar Beckles. So not the start to the season that he would have wanted or the performance he would have wanted, but I'm hoping to get him on the podcast later in the season, so I'll stop there.
Anything else in League One you'd like to draw our attention to, Adrian?
A couple of things, yeah. Daniel Mandrew. Brilliant performance from him for Lincoln. I had a message, I can't remember what, which on one of the socials, from a Lincoln fan saying they were disappointed with my assessment of Lincoln's chances this season. Maybe I was a little bit harsh on them. I was just a bit down on their prospects. But this was a good win, wasn't it, for a Wickham team? Wow. 2-3-0 defeats to start the season. I mean, that's not good. That's not good at all. So, but well played, Mandrew. Two excellent crosses for the first two goals, and he scored as well with a terrific drive. So yeah, he's someone maybe to keep your eye on. I think he only got seven goals in total last season, but he's someone that can contribute. The other things I just thought we should shout out: Wigan and Cambridge. Great starts for them. Wigan, psychologically, you know, they're up against it because they've got the points deduction, but they're getting on with it. Had 24 shots against Northampton. Excellent from them. They were 1-0 down as well. Brilliant goal from Callum McManaman, who's, you know, he's got talent. He shouldn't really be playing in League One, but that's where he finds himself. And for Cambridge, well done. I mean, a lot of people were fancying Oxford, swatted them aside on the opening day, and they've gone and won 2-0 at Fleetwood. Really, really solid. Janay and Ahadmay been prominent across those two matches. So yeah, really, really bright start for Cambridge. And they had that last year, didn't they? And in the end, they were just about clinging on for survival. But yeah, I'm pleased to see it.
All right, later we're going to do some scouting reports. Next today, though, we'll head to League Two. All right, it's time for our weekly Stockport section. Another defeat for the team that we've tipped. This time they went down 2-1 at Sam's old club, Walsall. We'll talk about Walsall first then, Sam. I mean, if nothing else, we've not made nearly enough of the fact that they're called the Saddlers and their manager is Matt Saddler. It's Arsene Wenger at Arsenal all over again, isn't it?
And we had Paul Hartley at Hartlepool. Sorry, just there was something in there. I just had to get it out. Yeah, we've had some good ones, didn't we, the last few years. Yeah, I know Matt Saddler. I haven't brought that to his attention. Not that he probably needs me to bring it to his attention, but you know what I mean. Yeah, this is a brilliant win, first and foremost. And I think for a new manager in a new role, yeah, that's colossal. Colossal. I think it probably makes it more sweeter that it's against Stockport as well. Maybe they're just struggling a little bit with the favourites tag that I think everyone had probably given them, pretty much anyone who follows the lower leagues. And rightly so. You look at the forward players, you know, at the weekend, Barry, Madden, Powell. I mean, this is a quality squad once more. And I don't have two concerns about them. I spoke about the back three last week being quite offensive, really. Two fullbacks in there, and maybe that's something they'll have to look at Stockport. Sorry, I've digressed there. You wanted to ask me about Walsall, but I think they may change to a back four. Something defensively needs to give, because if they're giving away goals, then obviously there's pressure, yes, on the good attackers, but they shouldn't be asked to score 2-3 goals every week to gain them points. But for Walsall, I mean, I like the look of the attacking options. For one, Danny Johnson, we know what he's done in a Walsall shirt so far, the old DJ. He's 14 in 24 starts for Walsall. Scored again here. And then really good substitutions from Matt Saddler. Jamil Matt and Aramidi Ote, they're two excellent forward options to bring on in the bottom tier. So Ote gets himself a goal. They had to withstand a lot of pressure. 18 shots, Stockport, 40 crosses. That's the stat that jumped out to me, because we know that they play with the wing-backs and like to bombard the box. So stellar performances from the three Walsall centre-halves, and a bit of a gamble as well with Harry Williams, 20-year-old right centre-back, and the right wing-back, Joe Falks, 20 years old as well. So some youthfulness. He had other options, but went with two younger guys down the right-hand side, and helped by Ote late on, who did a lot of good, diligent defensive work. They got over the line. So they've conceded a couple late doors, I think, Walsall as well. So it could have been a little bit more comfortable for the supporters. They want to stop that, because that's not a great habit to pick up, especially early part of the season. But yeah, given the strength of the opponent, I thought this was a brilliant, brilliant win.
Speaking of brilliant wins, Adrian, Notts County got their first back in the Football League, 3-2 against Grimsby. Luke Williams said he was happy to have his team back after last week's humbling at Sutton. They twice came from behind to get this victory, kind of summoning the spirit of the end of last season.
Yeah, brilliant, weren't they, at coming from behind, involved in some thrilling matches, en route to promotion. And yeah, they dug deep, didn't they? Because it would have been easy to feel sorry for themselves and think, oh, here we go again. It's just not happening for us. But yeah, they turned it around in the game, and they turned it around with some excellent attacking play. On the negative side, High Line got caught out for the two goals for Grimsby, runs in beyond the last man. So they've got to be a bit more careful about that. Also, Grimsby, a little bit like Sutton, really focused on the pressing. So County want to play the football. They're in this 3-4-3. They want to play through the lines. I think League Two sides are saying, well, come on then. We're going to really take it to you in terms of the press. So, yeah, they've just got to get used to that, I think, Notts County moving forwards. But yeah, really good goals. Jody Jones, superb. Down the left-hand side, signed from Oxford. I really like there's a little triangle down the left with Jody Jones, John Bostock on his inside, and David McGoldrick sort of playing left side up front. I think those three had a really strong day. And on the other side, we saw Dan Crowley score, or Crowley. Brilliant cross from Jones. Crowley gets to the back stick, scores the winner with a header. Lovely moment, because I know Dan Crowley a little bit from his time at Arsenal. He definitely doesn't score very many headers. Me and him would probably, yeah, he'd probably count on one hand how many headers we got between us. So I was pleased for him. And I just wish him so well, Dan Crowley, because Arsenal sort of pinched him from Villa when he was a youngster. And he was touted as being the next big thing. You know, we've seen it so many times, haven't we? It just didn't happen for him, unfortunately. As soon as he got into men's football, he didn't shine, not in the way that everyone expected him to. And he's still only 26, but this is his 11th club that he's represented already in his career. That's a lot of loan moves. He's been over to Holland and back a few times. He was at Morecambe last season. There's a player there. I'm telling you, Dan Crowley has got talent. I really hope that Luke Williams can extract the best out of him, because yeah, I want to see gifted players make the best of their abilities. And I think at this stage, he himself would admit that he hasn't produced what he's capable of.
In terms of any other business, Sam, I wonder if what a lot of agents just said there about Dan Crowley could also be applicable to Macaulay Bonn, who's joined Gillingham from Charlton. Didn't really happen for him at QPR, did it, when he got the move there? Had a good loan at Ipswich a couple of seasons back. But we've spoken, haven't we, about the squad that Neil Harris is putting together down there. And he ought to be another decent addition to that. Only 27. Mm. Best years now, if not ahead of him.
Yeah, Neil Harris just needs to tap into whatever got him motoring at Leyton Orient all those years ago, because, you know, he got his moves, didn't he? Went to Charlton. I think he scored a few goals initially, ended on a little bit of a sour note. And then QPR, Ipswich worked a little bit initially, tailed off. He's not been able to do it consistently. So I think this probably now is his level. I think he's going to a club very much on the up. Also a club that very much needed another goal scorer. So to compliment Naderson and Tom Nichols, all the good work, I know Naderson's scoring at the moment, but all the good work those two do in terms of approach play, creating goals, Oliver Hawkins to come back as well. Gillingham are 3 from 3. They were one of the sides I was going to highlight this morning in any other business. How can you not? What start to the season for them? I think I had them maybe in my playoffs, potentially going up at Wembley. You might have to upgrade that now, because this is a phenomenal start to the season for them. So yeah, really good signing. Couple of other teams to mention, definitely Barrow. I know that we're going to come onto it in a minute, but they were helped out by a little bit by Sutton United going down to 10, but still came back from behind to win 2 from 2, and big thumping wins for Mansfield and Newport worth a mention. But yeah, definitely Gillingham and Barrow in particular, two teams to watch.
For sure. And yeah, just a quick one on Crewe. Obviously 2-0 down in both league matches so far, and they've clawed it back on both occasions, this time away at Swindon.
Play that robbery.
It might have been. It might have been. But look, they've dug deep. They've shown some balls, haven't they, to come back and earn themselves 2 points, because the first weekend was against Mansfield. You know, two good teams. Obviously, Mansfield had a player sent off, so that gave them a leg up. But yeah, it's quite freaky, I guess, that Rio Adebisi was the man that scored the equaliser in both weeks. So well done to him. Well done to Crewe.
Yep, well done, Crewe. Right, we're going to do some scouting reports next. Hoji Miyoshi, Adrian. Tell me more about him. He plays for Birmingham.
Yeah, look, he's a player. He's signed from Antwerp. He's joined Birmingham City this summer. He's a full Japan international. Hasn't got loads of caps, I think 5, and he's not been capped for a little while. So he's sort of looking to, I guess, yeah, gain a bit more attention in the Championship, maybe get his international career back on track. But yeah, I saw him down at the Completely Suzuki Stadium. And honestly, he was great. The first 10 minutes, nothing happened for him. He got bullied because he's small. Like a lot of these sort of technical Japanese players, he's not particularly strong or muscular. And the Cheltenham players knocked him all over the place. Every time it went into him, bang. Knocked him over. Next ball, bang. He's looking at the ref saying, come on, give me some protection here. And then he used his brain and he got into some brilliant positions. I thought he's a player that's got Excellent game awareness, clearly clever and bright. And he just took up positions where Cheltenham couldn't mark him and received it on the half turn. And when he did that, he opened things up brilliantly. A couple of excellent, precise through balls for Birmingham's front players, little 1-2s, give and goes. Doesn't mind a little dribble with it as well, Miyoshi. A real fan's favourite in the making. He came on at the weekend against Leeds. It's a drab, it's a dreary game. You know, neither side playing particularly well. Bang. He lifts it. He elevates the game with little moments of quality. Give it to me. I'm going to make something happen. I don't think he's a winger. A lot of Blues fans thought I was going to come in and play on the wing. I think he's a guy that plays in behind the striker. Whether that's Hogan, Jukovic, or maybe somebody else, because I think that they could do with another front man, Birmingham City, moving forwards. But if he plays in behind a striker with pace that makes good runs, I'm telling you now, Miyoshi will create a lot of goals this season. So, yeah, there'll be certain games where he gets roughed up, certain games where defenders bully him, but there is a player there that can make things happen. So, I'm excited to see what's to come from Koji Miyoshi.
Yeah, it looks like it might be an interesting season for Birmingham, so we'll keep an eye on him. We're not going too far from Birmingham for your pick this week, Sam, for your scouting report. It's Haji Wright of Coventry City. Interesting career path he's had. New York Cosmos to Schalke to VVV Venlo to Sondagsk to Antalyaspor to Coventry. It's a path not very well trodden.
I'll tell you what, though, New York Cosmos would be on my dream journey as well, would it not? That'd be the, 35? You go over there for your last year. I don't know if they're still going, actually. I know they got relaunched a few years ago. Maybe I'm talking about it as if I was a 70s player. This could be one of the signings of the season, I think. It's a decent chunk of change that they paid for him. They've obviously reinvested the Jokeres money quite quickly on some really good players, I think, Coventry, and are going to be able to do so again, having lost old dreamy Gus Harmer, which is a big blow. But yeah, I saw Wright obviously at AFC Wimbledon last week, and he didn't score. In fact, he missed about five good chances. I think he had seven attempts on the night, but my goodness me, coming away from it, I was like... The movement was just superb. I mean, he's probably rangier than Jokeres, but I wouldn't say that Jokeres is any quicker. I reckon he's just as bright as him. So sharp down the sides. A lot of kind of Palmer looking for him early, which they're going to have to try and replicate with another one of the midfield players. But such a lovely thing. I always say it, when you've got a forward player who just wants to run towards goal or wants to run in a channel and take defenders back to their own goal. Such a luxury for Coventry, and it was on Tuesday. A couple of times let down by his decision-making, I think probably in his eagerness to get his first goal, where he'd ripped from the halfway line in behind and he had a little square pass on or a little cut back and he went for goal. So that will improve now. He got his goal at the weekend against Middlesbrough. Bit of a scuff, maybe. Just hit it into the ground, but he looks like he's got two decent feet. And he was a 1-in-2 punter, you know, previously in his career in Turkey, certainly 15-in-28 last season. He's got two for his country already, USA. So I think this is probably nearly as perfect as Coventry could have gone and got in the transfer market. And if Ellis Sims doesn't get going, and he hasn't got going as of yet, then I would presume Haji Wright's going to be in from the off, maybe with Godden, which I didn't anticipate, but Godden started the season really well. And I think Haji Wright also gives Coventry the nice option of playing the two number 10s. Callum O'Hare should be back, I think, in around about a month or so's time. So different options, but couldn't have been more impressed with him, really, on Tuesday. Should have had a hat-trick, mind you, that said. But very, very good. And having got his first goal, up and running, expecting big things.
All right, from one side of the world to the other for this week's scouting report, then the Japan international Koji Miyoshi and the USA international Haji Wright. Right, we are just about done for the week, but I've got a tweet of the week. In fact, Barrow seemed to have won social media this weekend. Clarky, you flagged up a TikTok, which is not really going to work as tweet of the week because it's a video thing, so it's going to take me too long to go through the particulars of it. But just give me a brief recap of what they did and why you enjoyed it so much.
They produced a great video. It's got music. It's got sort of audio on it. It's basically taking the mickey at Harry Smith, who was very cheeky last weekend when he waved in the face of the Notts County goalkeeper as he was red carded, and then it sort of has a 1 week later, and then it's got a picture of him getting red carded against Barrow, and they've got a little emoji on there that's waving at him. And also I don't know which player it was for Barrow that gave it the two hands at once silly wave to Smith. So we weren't the only ones that picked up on that little bit of yethousery from Smith last weekend. So he's got it both barrels, and I thought it was funny. Well done, Barrow. Good on the pitch. Superb off it.
So this is after they beat Sutton 2-1. The tweet of the week, I'm a much more simple man than Adrian. So I simply like them tweeting after the match. Not a bad game, eh? Winking face emoji. A big thanks to Cumbria Roofing, who was our match sponsor today. Why has that made me laugh so much, Sam?
Because the first line was more than enough just by itself. That's fine. Just leave it there. Thank Cumbria Roofing in another medium, another means later on. In the programme, even. On the scoreboard. Yeah, it's just an unnecessary.
Didn't even use their handle though, did they?
Hopefully they don't have a handle. That makes it even better if they don't have a Twitter feed. Just an unnecessary nod to the local roofing firm.
Slightly awkward, Clarkie, because obviously, you know, it's an open air stadium. Oh, they do have a Twitter page. I've just looked, Cumbria Roofing. So this is by far the most mentions that they've ever had, though. So big for them. Hashtag roofing, it says. Cumbria Roofing are the Northwest's leading family-run hashtag roofing business. Based in West Cumbria, we service the whole of Cumbria, including Windermere, Keswick. They haven't tweeted, though, Adrian, since 2013, so maybe that's why they didn't get atted by Barrow.
that's an astonishing length of time, isn't it? Outrageous. Look, I just hope that our great pals at Quinbet aren't too unhappy with us plugging another firm here. I don't think they're in competition, are they? Cumbrian Roofing and Quinbet, but yeah, hopefully they're cool with it.
Yeah, we're only a month away from the 10-year anniversary of Cumbria Roofing's last tweet, so we'll keep you updated if there's any more from them. We're a bit more prolific on social media than Cumbria Roofing. Adrian, tell us more.
Yeah, we're trying to beef up the content. We'll get there moving forward. Sam did a great video the other day, which was sort of retweeted, and I did a video from Cheltenham. So whenever we go to a game, we're going to try and put out some instant match reports just on top of the content that we produce from the podcast. So if you want to see us in action,
we could maybe have a video battle, Clarkie, you know, in terms of views, like, but you've got to take into account how many followers we've each got, Matt, so you can work that out.
Okay, I was going to say, well, we do it on an average, otherwise.
Yeah, of course it's an average. Yeah, it's an average. Yeah, of course it is. Okay. Of course it is.
I'm up for that. I'm up
Video
for that.
Video battle.
Yeah. Loads of views. Really, really good. At EFL What There on Twitter /X, and on Instagram and TikTok is just at What The EFL. And we'd love you to share it. The numbers have been great, I've got to say. Loads and loads of new listeners this season. We appreciate you all tuning in, and please, yeah, if you can share things on social media, it helps, and just tell your mates.
Yes, and thank you to everybody who's left us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and some nice words. We appreciate that. If you could keep it up, that would be great. Before we go, a reminder of that offer from our friends at Quinbet. They've enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It's for new customers that sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of this pod. It's 18+, and remember, always gamble responsibly. Okay, that's going to do it for What The EFL this week. We'll be back same time next week, running through all the big stories in the Football League. So join us for that if you can. For now, though, have a great week. Enjoy the football. We'll catch up with you soon.